because they're bought offshore, are much more complex. When we brought a program forward to procure, let's say, a low-level air defense system, our new M109, we're looking for offset arrangements. When we bought the Leopard tank, we said to Krauss-Maffei Wyss, we said to the Germans, we have to have offset arrangements so that every dollar that we spend in Germany of that main battle tank, you have to buy something here in Canada. What do you think they bought?
What?
Plywood.
No
yes.
way.
Yes. Absolutely.
Did they?
They couldn't find anything else. There's nothing here. There's no military industrial complex vis-a-vis the States to speak of. I mean, there's little bits and pieces here and everywhere. There's McDonnell Detweiler and Canadair, Bombardier. You know, there's IMP down in Halifax. There's no long-term capability. No. And if you want a new system, as soon as you get approval, all these other mandarins come on the wall saying, Chapter 7, we needed a new counter-mortar radar, and it's built by Hughes, Culver City, oddly enough, and it's called M36, M37. We looked at Brit, we looked at American. American system's best. It's the phased array antenna. And the years have gone by. It's now the early 1980s, and I'm director of land requirements. So I go down to the States on a visit. I've got about four places I want to visit, so I go and talk to these guys that use aircraft, who build the American radar system, whatever the number is. I think it's the M36, counter-mortar radar. And there's a larger version of the thing, counter-gun radar. Anyway, this is the counter-mortar radar. We have a stated requirement. We have it funded. We put out a request for a proposal. Well, the Department of Industry's got involved in this thing, saying we need to have offset arrangements. So I'm visiting the manufacturer of this radar set. The guy comes in, the vice president comes in, and says, I understand you're Colonel McGibbon from Ottawa. Yes, I am. That's me. We're having a problem with Chapter 4, the offset procurement. So what's the problem? Said, well, first of all, you want to buy our radar set, buy the radar set, but we're not interested in coming to Canada setting up, buying anything from you guys, or setting up a branch line, or we're basically terminated, but we're required to come to Canada. And he was furious. He said, we'd like to sell you this stuff, but we can't meet Chapter 4, the offset arrangements. And he said, furthermore, we can't find Prince Edward Island on the map. You know, we found Vancouver Island, we found the Queen Charlotte Islands, we found the San Jose Islands, but we couldn't find Prince Edward Island. Where the hell is it? It's the wrong side of the continent. I mean, here we're saying you got to build a plant in PEI because you got four liberal MPs from there, and that's the stupidity. I mean, you wouldn't believe this stuff. There it is. Any interest in you guys? If you want to, when you want Canada, if you want to buy, if it's a large procurement. And it's all structured, you know, if it's $50 million, you've got to do this. If it's $100 million, major ground project. We bought the low-level air defense system in the mid-1980s. And the companies involved, big companies, wherever they were, set up a plant in Canada. So they manufactured this stuff in Saint-Jean, Quebec. Why not Saint-Jean? Why Saint-Jean? Well, you don't have to look at a map of Canada. Say, there it is. Well, they manufacture stuff, but because of the downwinding of the Cold War, nobody else wants to buy it. Plus, it's an orphan.
Yeah.
Americans are not going to buy it. It's the best system in the world.
Yeah.
Here's the best. The best is the enemy of the good. Could have bought a good system from the Brits, maybe, or the Germans. Actually, they're buying American. We should have bought American, but their system's old. It's due to be replaced. The Americans say, if you put this thing into production, put the lads in the system, we'll buy it from you, blah, blah, blah. All this stuff, loose talk. So they set up at great expense the manufacturing capability in Saint-Jean, Quebec. They go into production. Production line runs for 4 to 5 years. And then it's finished. Well, what do you do with your infrastructure then? Where do you find employment for the high-tech workers? They got to go find work elsewhere? And today, the LAD system, which was purpose-built to meet a requirement, which is excellent in all respect, is now facing the end of its life. So it's going to be scrapped. There's no follow-on for it. If it was American, they would have a new system, would be integrated with them and all that stuff. Very, very complex as a nation. But I look at the mid-1970s and say, was their perception that Canada didn't support it? I believe they did support us because they had gone through this downsizing of the brigade from the north, moved them north and south. We always felt that we were on our way home. Mm-hmm. First of all, we're on a base, at an air base, an army equipment, heavy equipment, sitting in the middle of LAR. I couldn't move the tanks, heavy equipment around without getting in trouble because the aircraft would arrive, and one of course would arrive in their spot. Foreign object damage on the runway, even though we'd swept, it wouldn't pick up a big rubber pad, and we move out in the middle of the night, all that stuff. Very, very significant problem. And a total compromise. I couldn't train locally. I couldn't do driver training. But I don't think it was deliberate. I think it was just a Canadian approach saying, you are now reserve brigade. You will be reserved for both the 7 U.S. Corps and the 2 German Corps. On call to move here or here, on a, you know, in the event that the balloon goes up. And once we downsized to the brigade that we were, even though the perception was that someday we're going to come home, the Berlin Wall is going to come down. We didn't believe the Berlin Wall was going to come down. You couldn't see it coming. Ronald Reagan said to Gorbachev, Mr. Gorbachev, you believe in freedom, take the wall down. He took the wall down, everything changed overnight. Soviet Union collapsed. Thank goodness for Mr. Reagan. I don't think he was given much credit at the time, but he's certainly given credit today. So you look at leadership, very powerful. I believe that we were doing the right things. It wasn't perfect. You know, you never have. Oh, we don't have a brigade's not big enough. You know, we should be a division, all stuff. I think we were doing well. And from the viewpoint of support, I think the support was there. I mean, we were being funded. Once that thing happened with the main battle tank, with Trudeau, whoever told him, whether it was Sacco or somebody said to him, you know, Mr. Trudeau, if you want to have your brigade in Europe, you need to get a new main battle tank, because the attitude changed immediately, and we moved forward. Yeah. You couldn't run the Centurion. It was a disgrace. It was a national disgrace. It was not supportable. But then back in Ottawa, the reality is there's only so much money and you got to compete with the other departments, whether it's, you know, Medicare is coming up and it's making big demands. There's always the balancing act and the priorities from the top down saying, just give the military just what they need to get the job done, but don't overfund them. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think that we were on a national basis. I mean, we're not a big country. We're a big country geographically, but at that time, I think we're, 24 million people or even that high? I mean, I don't know what the population was. Today, we're 33 million.
Yeah, it's still very small.
But how much money do you want to put in the military? I mean, why do we need a great big military? What's the threat? Where's the threat? Tell me what the threat is. You know? And to articulate that in the modern world takes a lot of very, very good long-term strategic thinking. And any time you enter negotiations in Ottawa, you have to believe that the people you're negotiating with do not have an interest in the Canadian military. They have an interest in something else, their own man. They have their own agenda. And that might be simply to say, if you want a new fancy toy, then there's got to be an offset arrangement to provide employment to Canada. Well, the studies done by the Royal Military College and other places have clearly indicated that there's not much, there's not really much support for the military. And economically, it doesn't do anything. I mean, manufacturing the low-level air defense system and other stuff. The Americans believe in the NIH syndrome. You've heard that word. Mm-hmm. Not invented here. Whereas we do not manufacture our own military kits. Mm-hmm. So we go buy it from somebody else. Well, you know, the Americans understand better than anybody else how to put employment in their local municipality or whatever.
That's for sure, yeah.
And they've got problems today, too. So I think in the 1970s, on balance, you could always have more. Give me more. But it's a Cold War.
Yeah.
We were well respected. I think we were getting the right sort of support. Once we were downsized, And once Trudeau or whoever talked to him said, mm-hmm. look, if you want to stay in NATO, you got to get yourself a new main battle tank. You will not. Mm-hmm. If you can't do any better than the Centurion, take the whole thing home. Yeah. I think he was told that point blank. And that was the turning point.
That was the turning point right there. Now, here's a question. This is kind of switching gears, but I wonder, were you provided with any sort of ideological background about Soviet communism, or was the information you got about the Soviets more cut and dry?
I'm a military technologist. Yeah. I believe in free trade. Mm. God, country. Queen. I wear a uniform. I'll go to war. Those Soviets are bad people.
But you're an intellectual, too. You see? Are they knocking on your door again? So we were just talking about education in term, by the military in terms of Soviet activities, Soviet propaganda, Soviet communism, and apparently it was
bad.
No.
It's all bad. I mean, my focus was on engineering,
yeah.
graduate studies in aerospace sciences, graduate studies in military technology. I understand what he's done. Mm-hmm. I understood his capabilities. I know his plans in general. I've studied myself. Marxist, Leninism. Mm-hmm. And I'm not a neophyte on this. I read widely, whether it's The Economist, Fortune Magazine, Time Magazine, you name it, I read it. But I'm not a military mm-hmm. historian in point of Soviet capability. But I fundamentally believe in democratic society, in our constitution, in our constitutional monarchy approach to doing business. It's very difficult. I mean, I've been exposed to this. The way we do things, I happen to believe it's right. It's very tough to manage in democracy, but you got to do it.
Yeah.
And the whole question is that of leadership. But we live in an open society. I mean, I have to believe that the open society is superior to this wretched stuff that I've seen in the Soviet side.
Mm-hmm. That's
and that's been that was confirmed later on when I went to the National Defense College and studied Russia and went into Poland and went into China and said, you guys want to survive, you got to open up, allow people to do their own thing. You can't be dictated by a few central bureaucrats. I mean, look at what Trudeau did with, you're going to dictate a metric system. So we've got half a metric system.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a half a metric system. And tell me about, you know, if you go to buy a new house today, are we talking square meters or square feet?
Exactly.
We've got half a constitution, too, but I won't go down that road. So half a, you know, you want me to talk politically, I can. But basically, at that time, I was total military. We do not talk politics. Mm-hmm. Half a metric system. I mean, what could be dumber than having two of chess? So if you're working in the trades, electrical or plumbing and all that stuff, I'm saying, are we metric or are we?
Yeah.
And our greatest trading partner in the United States is the English system, miles per hour, square feet, inches, mm-hmm. feet, and all that stuff. And their approach was, you want to go metric. You know, Trudeau that put the metric system in. Great concept. Except that our trading partner is not metric.
Yeah.
So what do you, you know, a 2x4 is 2 inches by 4 inches. Actually, it's not 2 inches. But how do you make that metric?
Yeah.
You're going to build a metric house, for example? So I happen to believe that our way of doing business is right. You point at democracy, constitutional monarchy. I believe we live in the greatest country in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I've traveled the world. I've traveled through Europe. I've lived in Europe. I've traveled throughout the Middle East, traveled throughout Africa, South America, South Central Africa, traveled throughout the Pacific Rim.
Yeah.
I happen to believe that we live in the most wonderful country in the world. Not perfect. But if you want to write something in, you want to write a letter to the editor, write a letter to the editor without being arrested, as they're being done in Pakistan, as we talked about.
Exactly.
So, yeah, we, mm-hmm. And the whole structure is, I mean, having visited Poland and having my room bugged, having visited China and having my room bugged, it's very easy to do. Find out whether or not you're bugged.
Really?
Check in a hotel room in Poland, for example, and I was traveling for the military. And all you have to say is this, oh, I can't get this window open. Or, oh, I need more hangers in my locker, in my closet, and leave the room and come back a half hour later. The window will be opened, and there will be more hangers in the Sure. And you will be subverted with booze and emails approaching and all that stuff, so you have to know how to manage that side of it too. So,
Different structure.
Different structure, political, overwatch.
Yeah.
Build this building and live in it. And, mm-hmm. I mean, when the Berlin Wall crashed and came down in 1990, and the wall disappeared between the barriers just between East Germany and West Germany. The stuff that was going on in East Germany was unbelievable. I mean, they didn't have paint to paint. It was a mess. I mean, environmentally, it was just a disaster. I mean, so afterwards, everything that I saw to prove the right of a constitutional monarchy is bang on. Well, we're not perfect either, for sure, but and there's always political structures to say. But I think at the time, does that sort of answer the
definitely,
question?
Definitely, yeah, that's really good. In summary, if you want to comment across from 77 to 79, the years you were there, what you think were the greatest or the most significant changes or developments for CNBG during the time period?
Well, from what I saw in the 1960s and 1970s, it would probably be, first of all, we got the leadership is much fresher. Although the leadership in the 1960s was excellent too. I mean, we had some great generals at that time, and a lot of them left to retire. They were World War II generals. Mm-hmm. And they left the service in the 1960s, and they were replaced by guys like myself who came along and were probably getting a fresh approach. Probably not as forceful as the earlier guys had been because they didn't have the experience, but by and large, well liked, well respected. Probably more tolerant of the stuff that was going on, a greater ability to give and understand and appreciate issues and concerns that we brought forward from time to time. Good listeners. I did well. I liked my leadership. I had two leaders, two brigade commanders when I was there. General Jack Vance, who was a superb individual. General Jimmy Fox, they both went to three-star generals. Mm. And Charlie Belzeal, my good friend Charlie Belzeal, who was the two-star at the time, he went to three-star. And they warned me not to go down too far a road in the world of technology. And I said, yeah, well, I'm going to do it anyway, so we'll see how it goes. So I got chucked out in the rank of colonel, if you like. I left in the rank of colonel, whereas if I'd probably just stuck with the game plan of being going down the road towards a purist staff officer and not getting too involved in technology. But I happened to believe that technology was pretty important, and somebody had to do it, and so I was available. Besides, I like to play golf in England.
I
honestly haven't suffered too much. And it was never my goal to go up. I mean, I was just, my goal was to get command. That was my personal goal, to get command, and I got that. And once that was done, I kind of lost interest in the whole charade.
And you went quite far after that, too.
Yeah.
Can you
comment? But I was well respected for what I did, and there was a lot of people who were disappointed when I left the service.
Well, and it was cutting edge. Like you said, you wrote the paper for the Leopards.
I wrote the paper for Leopard. I brought along another document I wrote years ago. That's a lightweight paper.
Oh my gosh. Holy cow. Wow. Oh my goodness. When did you do this?
Reconnaissance, surveillance, target acquisition. It's I've dredged my brain of all the stuff that I knew from on the subject of reconnaissance, surveillance, target acquisition, and wrote this book. Now, obviously, I had a lot of other books that I referred to. Radar systems, optical sights, binoculars. Anytime you see a Canadian soldier with the little optical sight on it, a machine gun.
Yeah.
That was my work.
Oh, my goodness.
That sight. That's written up in that book.
When did you get the idea to do this?
It was under contract for the Royal Military College. It's a graduate level textbook.
I'm not choosing any locations today. I'm like, so, and this is available, or is it just for people who are at the school?
I think there's some restrictions on it, on the distribution. It's kind of dated in many cases. It was written in 1995. But we'll see in here. Weather and terrain implications, day and night time, changing the eyeball from dawn to dusk, rods to cones, cones to all that stuff. Weather conditions, how do you see? How do you see from a satellite? How does synthetic aperture radar work? For example, SAR.
SAR, I don't know.
Is that me?
No.
That's my.
Oh, really?
Just doing something in the closet for me.
In summation, or in closing, any general trends you noticed in terms of government support for Canada's native contingent in West Germany?
I'm sorry.
Oh, sorry, yeah. In closing, are there any comments you have on observations you may have made pertaining to Canada's commitment to the NATO contingent in West Germany? So, in terms of support,
we were part of it.
Yeah.
Were we a significant part of it? On balance, I think we did as much as we had to do. We could have done more, obviously. Did we play the leadership role in causing the Soviet Empire to crumble? No, we didn't, but we were there. And I think the role that we played was very significant from the viewpoint of making a contribution as a country. And but you have to look at the context of what Ronald Reagan did in the 1980s with the Star Wars initiative to basically. And I believe that this was Stanford University initiative. And they said, and he was a great communicator.
Reagan. Yeah.
And what they said to Reagan was, look, the only way we're going to break this mad concept, mutually assured destruction, is price the Soviets out of business. So he ran up to Star Wars and just said. We're gonna. If we have to run a deficit, we'll run a deficit. The military trade. We're gonna run this up. So we ran up the Star Wars concept, and until the point where the Soviets just said, "We can't match it. Kill us. We can't compete." Plus, I think that the Soviet Union was very lucky. We were very lucky that Gorbachev was there. He was a man of the time. Gorbachev said. This is nuts. The whole thing is nuts. I mean, he came to North America and saw, he saw Disneyland and Disney World and free society living, and maybe it's not perfect and all that stuff. But the fact is, the Soviet Union is going nowhere. And what I saw with my travels, during my latter days in the military, when I was director of field studies, when I was in Berlin. I saw an event where we were just traveling through a checkpoint on a Sunday afternoon on a tour, and I was with the National Defense College. And the young soldier attempted to break the freedom from the west, from the east to the west. and he was clubbed and manhandled and battered with rifles and everything else and dragged away with broken arms, whatever. We had senior police officers with us from the RCMP and OPP. They could not believe that anybody could be managed. I mean, the number of individuals who were killed as they attempted to traverse at Checkpoint Charlie and other places from East Berlin to West Berlin was just devastating. They killed them. Somebody tried to escape to the West. And Gorbachev, bless his heart, believed that there's a better way to live and said, this is not working for us. And what I saw in my travels and behind the in the Soviet Union totally supported that. I mean, I saw huge buildings that were decrepit. I saw parks that were run down. Nothing was working. It wasn't working. I mean, you look at the cars that they drove, for example. Bunch of crap. Sure, they ran.
Yeah.
Totally dismal. No devolution of thought down to say we need a better car, we need a better way to live, we need to have the ability for people to own their own property. If it needed, the house needs to be painted, paint it. We have to provide paint. So the whole thing came apart at the seams. Central management simply does not work. So yes, I believe absolutely that what we're doing there was important. In hindsight, I can say that. Yeah, we won the war.
Yeah.
Was it as important as World War II? Yeah, absolutely. Was it important as the First World War? Yeah. Was it important as the Korean War?
Yeah.
All these things in context. Why do you need a military? You need a military to address these issues.
Yeah. Okay.
Is it important today? I happen to believe it is.
I
yes.
do too.
Yeah.
Definitely. Well, that brings us to the end of our questions. So if I could just get your oral consent on the recorder, that it's okay for us to use what we've talked about today
sure.
in the writing of a paper, that would be great.
You bet.